and good afternoon. Welcome into Market Talk for this Friday, February 5th, 2021. A good afternoon to you. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Thank you for joining us here today. MarketTalkAg.com, that's where you can find us, our home on the web, MarketTalkAg.com. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. It's all at MarketTalkAg. That is our that's our handle on social media. And you can find us on so many great streaming sources, including now officially on iHeartRadio, and really appreciate the folks at iHeartRadio picking up Market Talk for their platform. Well, we don't have an analyst on today. I'm going to go through our markets here. Coming up on the show in just a few minutes, we're going to talk about tax law and potential tax changes that could affect agriculture under the Biden administration. We'll talk with Chad Hansen, president of Corporate Farmer, based in Mason City, Iowa. We'll get to that discussion. Great discussion with Chad coming up here in just a few minutes. Also, after that, we got a really big show today. Jana Davidson with the Progressive Agriculture Foundation joins us for our February Progressive Ag Safety Message. And we're talking about burn awareness. So we'll talk to Jana in the back half of today's show. But first, let's recap our market trade here for today. And it was a mixed bag in the grain sector as we saw that mild pullbacks happened in front month soybeans late. Corn was pretty quiet while wheat was firm. U.S. dollar index traded lower and most commodities were higher with a few exceptions, like I mentioned. And again, U.S. wheats were modestly higher with colder U.S. temperatures on the way. Now, looking closer at this market, KC wheat led the charge there. In the meantime, soy complex front months went red, erasing some of those early gains. Corn was quiet as we did get a sale of 101,600 metric tons of old crop corn to unknown destinations reported this morning, but that really didn't affect the market quite a bit. However, census numbers for December reinforced the record demand for corn and soybeans, with exports revised higher in both. And we turn our attention to those USDA reports coming out here on Tuesday. And we saw some of that consolidation in the ag markets today because of that upcoming report. Traders generally expect the agency to further tighten its domestic and global balance sheets for soybeans, as well as corn and wheat, especially the soybean front, talking about getting this thing down more towards even tighter pipeline levels. And speculative traders were reluctant to be short the complex here for now, and that's kind of what we saw, a little bit of quiet spec trading here on the day today. Forecasters are also closely watching the Arctic surge into the plains of Midwest here this weekend into next week. It could be the coldest week faced by America since late 2010. The Arctic cold will create challenges for the livestock industry, particularly in the Western Feedlot District. It also creates some challenges for winter wheat that may not have sufficient snow cover for protecting the crop. Snow currently covers the eastern Dakotas and eastern Nebraska, and east from there across the central and northern Midwest. Forecast models currently disagree on the scope to which the damaging sub-zero cold will slip to the south. And meantime, we watch South American weather as well. That's another factor in the market trade, as Brazil looking wet, disrupting soy harvest, while Argentina is turning drier. We'll keep our eyes on that as well and how that impacts our markets moving into next week's trade. All right, let's take a look at final numbers in grains here on the day. March corn down 1.5 at 548.5. July corn down 0.5 at 536.25. September corn up 0.5 at 478.25. March beans down 5.75 at 1366.75. July beans down 1.75 at 1347.75. September beans up 1.5 at 1214.75. March bean meal down 260 a ton at 430.50. March bean oil 28 points lower, 44.66. March Chicago wheat up 3.75 at 641.25. March KC wheat up 6.5 at 625.25. March Minneapolis sprig wheat up 4.25 at 626. And March oats down 0.5 at 349.25. We saw cotton down slightly at 82.74 on that March contract today. Well, again, though, looking at this grain sector, pretty quiet close here to Friday. We'll be turning our attention to next Tuesday. Be interesting to see how Monday's trade goes. And we got to remember, we talk about this all the time. We are seeing some good price activity here and good levels, and it's something for producers for you to consider here with your marketing. Again, I'm no expert. I just talk to the experts, but everything I'm hearing, definitely want to take a look at those bottom lines, balance sheet, and talk with your marketing representative, your broker, and see if making some moves makes sense for you, whether it be old crop corn or making some new crop sales of corn, beans, wheat, etc. Something to look at here heading into this report. Although a lot of pre-report expectations are expecting that we're going to push that that carryout number closer and tighter to 100 on soybeans possibly, and corn would revise down as well with all those Chinese purchases we've seen recently. Well, something to think about. It's going to be a very important report here, and be interesting to see if the market's already priced in that report expectation or not. But again, probably a good opportunity this weekend or Monday morning to talk with your broker or analyst and just see what their thoughts are on your situation. Same goes in livestock. A mixed bag there today. February live cattle up 27 at 116.27, or 72, excuse me. April lives up 2 at 123.77. June live cattle down 22 at 119.97. March feeder cattle down 122 at 138.27. April down 47 at 142.20. February hogs 5 lower, 70.97. That's set to expire here next week. So a little consolidation in that front month hog contract. April hogs though up a dollar at 80.30. May hogs up 110 at 83.92. Mentioned feedlot country, seeing some sales there around 114 live in Kansas, Nebraska, Texas, Colorado. Bids in Iowa at 114. Dress bids at 180 in Iowa, and sales 178 dressed in Nebraska as well. So getting a light trade there as of here, just as I'm talking to you right now. We'll see if we get any more here to wrap up the week late this afternoon. And again, hogs are remaining strong as well. As we continue to kind of push that upward position in hogs, we'll be seeing where that trade goes moving into next week. Well, again, that's our market recap here for today. And always really enjoy talking with you and trying to share as much information as we can about the market trade. Coming up on Monday, we'll preview the WASDE report with Brian Doherty from Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. Also, we will have a good look at Monday's trade and try to get you set up heading into that report coming up next week. And now here on the show for this Friday, we're catching up on farm tax and some of the policies that could be coming down the line with the new Biden administration. I'm being joined now by a good friend of mine, Chad Hansen. He is the president of Corporate Farmer. They are a farm tax and accounting firm based in Mason City, Iowa. Chad, it's great to see you and talk to you. How are you?
Yeah, doing great. Great to hear from you. It looks like you're doing well, and always just fun to touch base and catch up again.
Yeah, Chad, it's always great to talk with you, and I know you got a wealth of knowledge, you and the team there at Corporate Farmer, when it comes to farm tax and accounting. And, you know, with the change in administration now, moving to the Biden administration, we're starting to see news stories and rumors and hearing things about changes that could come to tax policy that specifically affects agriculture. And I know there's a lot of things out there that worry farmers, I think, right now. What is some of the latest you're hearing when it comes to possible new tax changes we could have come down the line?
I think the big thing is the worry comes from, you know, how friendly, I guess, the past administration was when it came to businesses and especially agriculture. You know, you had government payments, you had the CFAP 1 and 2, and MFP, ARC, PLC, WIP Plus, all this stuff, you know, that went to help with the farmers. And even through the kind of, you know, issues with China that were kind of the beginning of that administration, they continued to support agriculture financially through that rocky times. And then, you know, with the tax policies there, you know, you had things like the 199A deduction, that 20% deduction in revenue for businesses, and they increased Section 179 on equipment and reduced tax rates, you know, bonus depreciation, brought back, you know, carryover losses the last couple years, you know, that in times when farming got pretty tough. And then just reduced restrictions and regulations on business. So, you know, talk about friendly. It doesn't get much friendlier than that. So, I think the concerns come from the fact of, how much is the new administration going to be concerned about, businesses and especially agriculture. And I think the issues that you're talking about really are things like peeling back some of that tax policy or allowing some of it to sunset, whether that's, the Section 179 that's up to $1 million, that has just continued to grow over the last several years in capital gains. I think that's a big topic that you're probably seeing in the news, especially with farmers and farmland. Capital gains can get to be significant on, the appreciation that we've seen in land prices. And so, if we saw that go from 15% right now on capital gains to say 28%, I mean, you're almost looking at a doubling in the tax liability, for those that rely heavily on that for maybe some, retirement. And then, I talked about the regulations on businesses and stuff, green policy, right? I mean, that's kind of the one of the foundations of the new administration. And how does that affect livestock producers and farmers in different ways, with pollution and things like that? I think that we heard, with the Obama administration, concerns about those restrictions and the increased costs that it passes on to the farmer. And unfortunately, the farmer being an end consumer, they're just not in a position to pass those costs on, to the next level. And so they eat that and it basically comes out of their bottom line.
Well, and there's a lot of things there to kind of to pick apart, Chad. And we know this much: farmers, they hold a lot of their wealth and assets, whether it be equipment or livestock or buildings or farm or land or whatnot. So, it's not necessarily as easy to just write a big tax check if things change, because I mean, that money is tied up in what they use every day. So it makes potential changes. I would say there's definitely some worry out there in farm country. Is that what you're hearing from clients right now?
Yeah, and you're hitting on, I think, the biggest issue that I left for you, and that's estate taxes. I think that is where the biggest concern is on estate taxes because, this administration has talked about significant changes there. Will they continue with a step up in basis? So, step up in basis is huge when it comes to equipment and land, as that's passed on to the next generation. And maybe non-farming heirs decide that they are going to go ahead and liquidate those farms, and that's good to kind of have some turnover and get that into new hands. So good for the opportunity for those people that aren't involved in the farm to pass that on to the kids that stick around and are continuing that operation. I talked a little bit about the capital gain situation, for individuals while they're alive, but there's also some rumors that maybe they would institute a capital gains tax at death. So instead of waiting until the time that maybe you pass that on and it was sold down the road, that capital gains tax might be assessed at your death. And so that would force kids into liquidating the farm because of the fact that they wouldn't have the cash. So many of these farms, the value is all tied up in assets and not in cash, and so that's not available. Now, there are some ideas out there that maybe, there would be a lien against the property that wouldn't be assessed against that, and the cash wouldn't have to be paid until, those assets were sold. But there's likely going to be some kind of interest charged and some additional fees associated with something like that. And then, the big thing, is the 1031 exchange. That's huge for being able to roll the value in a piece of property into another one without having to pay the taxes. I think there's a lot of fear that that goes away with this new administration. And so, just a lot of those things all wrapped into one. And obviously, it's the unknown. Probably not all of this is going to happen, but any one of these things could have a huge impact. And, In the Midwest, what do we brag about? What are we happy to kind of support is the Century Farms, right? And so, there's fears that this could break up some of those Century Farms just because of the fact that they, wouldn't be able to handle the tax burden.
Well, Chad, we're talking a lot of things that it sounds like could negatively impact agriculture if they go through with the new administration. Are you hearing any rumors of things that could be supportive to agriculture moving forward as far as tax policy is concerned? And again, a lot of this, as we're talking, it's kind of a crystal ball. We don't know exactly what's going to happen moving forward.
The good thing is there's a lot of stuff that was made permanent by the prior administration. So, it's going to take some support to make changes. We know, here in the Midwest that we do have good representation, right? And, in Iowa, Grassley has been, one of the biggest, supporters of agriculture for a long, long time. And so, they're going to go to bat for our farmers, and they're going to make sure that some of these things that I'm talking about, that if they were to get in, included in some tax policy, that there's going to be some provisions maybe to protect farms of a certain size. And, when it comes to things like this step up in basis and that capital gains tax, at death there, obviously they'll work to make sure that that is, something that our rural farmers are able to, have some kind of exception probably in there, so that they don't get in a position where they have to sell off everything just to pay the tax bill.
Very, very true. Well, Chad, obviously, again, we're talking about potential changes to tax policy, but of course, it is tax season looking back at 2020, and a lot of farmers, they got to be getting those returns ready. And we hope that, they have everything at least together and have things sorted out. What are maybe some things you'd want to remind producers of as they're getting those 2020 tax returns prepared and ready to go right now?
Yeah, so much of it is just getting organized, right? There's been so many changes that it's probably a good idea to start a little bit sooner rather than wait till the last second here. Maybe with some different forms. We've had several rounds at this point of stimulus. Our stimulus checks are something that is going to be asked on the return, how much we got, so that can be reconciled to see, whether you're entitled to any more. I think so many times people forget about these changes and they don't realize that they may need a little bit more when it comes to equipment trade, information about the item that they traded in, value, when did they purchase that? That's something that, has changed over the last couple of years. There's always additional questions that are asked, like a big one that was just instituted and has become a compliance issue is this, the Bitcoin, question. And I think, I laugh because most of our farmers are like, what's Bitcoin? So it's a pretty easy, no, I don't have Bitcoin. But, for others, I mean, that's something they dabbled in a little bit, and it's a new thing that is ever changing. And like I said, so much of this is it just feels like it changes on a weekly, monthly basis. And, probably the biggest thing right now for me is I don't know if you've heard of this PPP. Jesse, you ever heard of that? I'm sure some listeners have heard of PPP at this point in time. It's been around for almost a year now, and we kind of had the second round of that whole deal, and so I would say three-fourths of my phone calls right now and conversations with clients involve PPP. How does it work? What do I need? I need some help filling out this application. How much is it going to amount to in my situation? Man, that has consumed a lot of time for us here in the office.
I can imagine. Well, and for folks out there who are listening to us chat, I know you and your team there at Corporate Farmer work with farmers across the entire US and help them to kind of, make sense of their tax position and better their operation and make sure everything is organized and concise. And if folks are wanting a little help with that, how can they reach out to you?
Yeah, easy. Just give us a call, 800-472-6931, or you can check us out online at corporatefarmer.com.
Yeah, it's really easy. I still remember that toll-free number, by the way.
Well, that's good. Maybe it worked. Yeah. We'll have to be touching base there, Jesse.
Chad Hansen, president of Corporate Farmer in Mason City, Iowa. I appreciate you joining me today and talking more about potential tax policy changes and tax policy things to remember for this year. I really appreciate it. We'll have to talk again soon.
Yeah, that sounds great. Always look forward to talking to you.
Well, again, that is Chad Hansen, president of Corporate Farmer. They're based in Mason City, Iowa, and you can learn more about them at corporatefarmer.com. Well, we continue market talk here on this Friday. We roll from one great guest into another. We have our February Progressive Agriculture Foundation safety message, and joining us now, Jana Davidson with the Progressive Agriculture Foundation. Jana, how are you today?
How are you?
I am good. I appreciate you joining us as we have our February safety message here with the Progressive Agriculture Foundation. And this month we're talking about burn awareness. And, you know, this is something that it's more common than we probably think about, I would say, because burns can happen in multiple different ways around the home, multiple different sources. Burns can happen not just for adults, but for kids as well.
I agree. And we touch on it at different times throughout the year when we talk about fire prevention in the fall and October. But a lot of that focus gets on to, you know, using having working smoke alarms and things like that to prevent fires, which is very important. But burns can happen so quickly. So it is nice that there is some attention this month on that topic.
Well, and as we're looking as well, we have Burn Awareness Week, and that's a pretty big part of the February discussion, and that's coming from the American Burn Association, I believe, right?
Correct. So they have dedicated the first full week in February to bring attention to this issue, which I think is really important. And they have a cool theme every year. And this year it happens to be from amps to zap. So it's kind of playing off the alphabet there and mm-hmm. a really good way to, you know, start these conversations as a family, start to talk to your children who, you know, again, with this whole COVID world that we're still living in, may have opportunities where they're home by themselves and may get into an incident where a burn could, you know, cost them a major injury or cost them their life. So it is an important topic, and I'm glad that we're able to bring some awareness to it, shed some light on it today.
Well, and I know as well in this month's newsletter from the Progressive Agriculture Foundation and Progressive Agriculture Safety Days, you guys touch on a story from, I believe, about 7 or 8 years ago of an Iowa family. And it's just one of those many stories that, unfortunately, you know, has a sad component to it, and it's things that we don't want to hear about when it comes to burn-related injuries and or deaths.
You are exactly right. It does sting. And when this story came to us, you know, we knew that we needed to tell the story, because if it can reach one family and they can think, oh, that could happen to me, I am going to take action and make sure we can prevent this from happening to my children. It's important. That's what we are. We're storytellers, and we want to do that to help prevent injuries and incidents from occurring. So yes, the Alsup family from Iowa, we actually got the opportunity to meet Jane, which would be Christopher's mother, here back in the fall. She was actually working on a grant-related project with another Ag NIOSH center that we work with. And so reached out to us just to talk a little bit about the process and a little bit about resources we had. And when we heard her story, I mean, it broke our hearts, you know, because it could happen to any of us. And so in the morning hours of September 21st of 2013, her son Christopher and his older brother, they decided, you know, they were going to go out and start a fire. Well, dad was still sleeping. Mom had just left for work. So how many of us do things, you know, around, you know, while our parents are not home or, you know, out of sight? And, you know, it should have been innocent, but Christopher had found a gas can, which was, as Jane puts it, very outdated. And what happened was, when he went to pour, you know, gasoline, that the flames just came back mm-hmm. and burnt 90% of his body. So I think Jane got the phone call about the incident happening from her husband as soon as she arrived at work. So I can only imagine, you know, getting to work and having to hear that news, and, you know, just devastating. And you think about how devastating that is to his older brother too, who witnessed the incident. You know, it's hard enough as a family, but to actually have to see that and think, you know, probably have that remorse too, the survivor's remorse that he was okay and his brother lost his life. So it is, it's such a tragic, tragic story. And, you know, they're very passionate about gas can exchange programs in their area and just making sure that, you know, we're getting rid of those outdated gas cans and getting ones that have that flame arrestor on them, and also keeping them in a safe place. That is all, make sure it's out of the reach of children, because if it is accessible, again, more of an opportunity for the kids to get in trouble.
Yeah, and a very sad story. I know the family introduced the Legacy of Christopher Alsop Foundation back in 2017, so they're continuing to raise awareness about that subject. And, you know, gas cans and fires, that's just one way that burns can occur. And I know you guys share in this month's newsletter a few ways you can prevent burn-related injuries, Jana.
Yes, we definitely do. So just to put this in perspective and how big this issue is, approximately in the U.S. and Canada, because that's where our safety days cover predominantly, nearly 450,000 people seek medical attention for burn injuries each year. And just if we look back, I think the most recent data from 2014 shared that 3,275 lives were lost because of burn-related incidents. So it is an issue. And so I am glad that we're able to talk about that a little bit more. Now, one area that we focus on, especially since the American Burn Association is focusing on electrical burns this year, is talking about electric safety, because that is and has been for the past few years the number one topic that has been taught at Progressive Agriculture Safety Day. So I think each year we, just in 2019 alone, that's probably our best statistics right now, because 2020 was our COVID year. We had a lot of virtual going on, which we still taught electric safety, but our best numbers are from 2019, where we reached 50,000 youth on that subject. So it is really important. So some of the messages we try to talk to the youth on are always making sure that they're checking for overhead power lines that might be down. Also looking down, we have so many utilities underground now, so that can be an issue. So always look down. So look up, look down, always obey the signs. The signs are there for a reason. So if it says danger, it means danger. It doesn't mean play area. And then also, we like to talk to them about what to do if there would be power lines that would happen to fall on their farm equipment or on a vehicle that they're in, because we actually have a success story, and Bernard shares this often, about a young man who went through our program and years later was on the farm, and I think he ran into some overhead lines and fell on his equipment. And of course his mom came out and she's like, get out of the tractor. And he was like, no, he knew that his safest place was to stay there and have his mom call 911. And that was the best way, because if he would have gotten out of that vehicle, he would have been electrocuted and lost his life. So these messages, you know, they do resonate, and maybe it's not the day of our event, but maybe it's months, years down the road. And that's what's really important to us. So I do have some good advice or some tips too for parents. So I mentioned the best thing is to talk to your parents or talk to your children as parents, especially this time where kids are home alone a lot more frequently. So 73% of the burns or burn-related injuries start at home. So that's why it is so important to start those conversations. So a couple key tips here. I have five key tips. And the first one is to make sure if you use lighters and matches, make sure you're doing those safely. And again, just like the gas can, keep it out of reach of children. If they know where you store those, you know, they can crawl up there and find it. So make sure you're storing it in a safe place that they're not going to be able to find it and utilize it when you're not around. Don't leave children unattended around flames. So everything from campfires, candles, barbecue grills, try to have a kid-free zone. And sometimes that's about 3 feet, or if you're in Canada, 1 meter away from where open flames are. And that's really going to help prevent an injury. And then if you're cooking, kids love to help in the kitchen. I have two girls and they helped me a lot while we were home during the year and kind of quarantined from going out and going to restaurants. So they like to help. But sometimes it's best to use those back burners, because then it gives you almost another safe area or a layer of protection when you're cooking. So always use covers to protect and keep, you know, fingers out of outlets. So I have a lot of friends, you know, that have had, I've been to baby showers, and we have baby showers coming up. And that's one thing I love to grab is the outlet protectors. You know, it's sometimes not the first thing that's on your mind, but protecting that from little fingers, because once little kids start crawling and walking, that's where they go to try to put their toys in or put their fingers in. So try to keep those covered. And then also electrical cords, you know, with power strips and such, you know, keep them. There's a lot of water sources in our kitchen and bathroom sometimes where we have those located, and that's where a lot of incidents can occur for women that use hair dryers, curling irons, even phone chargers for all. That can prevent an injury or present an injury if you are using it near water sources. So that's something to keep in mind. And then last but not least, keep accelerants such as gasoline and propane outside of the home and locked up. Just like the story we mentioned earlier, maybe if that container was locked up and also stored outside the home in a shed, in a barn somewhere else, it would have helped prevent an injury, an incident.
Well, all great insight as always, Jana. And of course, the Progressive Agriculture Foundation, Progressive Agriculture Safety Days. You're on that mission to provide education to kids. And, you know, you mentioned 2020 and COVID, and that kind of moved things virtually. And we're still kind of on that virtual platform, but hoping that you can move back to in-person events here later this year.
Yes, we have a great committee together made up of several of our board members, staff, and others that are in the safety world. And we are looking month by month. And right now we are going to still continue with virtual events through April 1st. But there is some light at the end of the tunnel. We're hoping possibly in the spring, depending on, again, the numbers, that possibly we can move into school settings and still have some school events in the spring. And hopefully as we get to fall, things may be back to normal. But we are really beefing up the virtual resources here in the next couple months. So we did have a lot here in 2020, but we want to have even more for 2021 for our coordinators, because we had some record numbers this year of applications, 492, I believe. So.
Wow.
Folks know that there's still an issue with safety and health, and they want to make sure that they're bringing it to the forefront, whether it's, you know, through the computer or in person. And we do appreciate that. So,
well, Jana, if folks want to learn more about some of those virtual components you guys have, or just learn more about Progressive Ag Safety Days in general, how can they do that?
Best way is to visit our website. It's www.progressiveag.org. There they're going to find our contact information, email, phone numbers, more about the program, success stories, a lot of things that I mentioned today. That's probably their best bet. And also, if they have stories, I encourage, if you're listening in and you have a story that you think could prevent an injury from occurring, just like Jane, when she reached out and gave me permission to share her story, we would love to hear it, because that is really what can make a difference. You know, you and I can talk about being safe, but when a family member has been touched by this and can share their experience and the effort to prevent something from happening, it speaks volumes.
Well, and of course, again, progressiveag.org, progressiveag.org, and the Progressive Agriculture Foundation is a nonprofit, and you can help send a child to a safety day. Just text the word safety day to 44321, and they can learn more information about supporting you guys as well on your website. And Jana, I appreciate the time for our February safety message. As always, thanks so much for joining us.
Same here, Jesse. Thank you so much for helping us get these important messages out.
And that's going to do it for Market Talk here on this Friday, February 5th. A busy show, a little longer than normal, as we had a couple great guests on. Big thanks to Jana Davidson again with the Progressive Agriculture Foundation, as well as Chad Hansen with Corporate Farmer, talking about farm tax policy that could be upcoming. And again, we'll be watching the market trade as we move into next week. Got the USDA reports due out on Tuesday. We'll preview those reports again and get caught up on the latest with Brian Doherty from Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson coming up on Monday's episode. You can find us again online, markettalkag.com. This has been the Friday, February 5th edition of Market Talk. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, wishing you a great afternoon and a great weekend.